If you're an employer, you probably experience hiring challenges from time to time. But right now, you face even more challenges, from rethinking your workplace safety to hiring employees for specialized roles. Matson Resources could relate. They needed to hire a seasoned Citrix administrator to provide support. Not an easy job to fill, so they turned to ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology finds people with the right skills and experience for your job. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. And that's how Matson Resources found Peter Alcantara Jr. Peter was laid off during COVID-19, and he needed to find another IT job quickly to continue paying his mortgage and bills. And he posted his resume on ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter identified him as a great match for the role at Matson Resources. They interviewed and hired Peter in less than 3 weeks. ZipRecruiter helped find Peter the right job, and they helped Matson find the right person for the hard-to-fill role fast. See how ZipRecruiter can help you hire. Try it now for free at ZipRecruiter.com/WBD. That's ZipRecruiter.com/WBD.
You're listening to Wharton Business Daily
on Business Radio.
Wharton Business Daily here on Sirius XM 132. I'm Dan Loney. Final segment of the show coming up at 12 noon Eastern Time. Another edition of Behind the Markets. Jeremy Schwartz, Jeremy Siegel coming up in just a little while. Well, the coronavirus pandemic has had significant negative impact on our economy, but it has also allowed people the opportunity to reach out and provide a lift to others who are going through hard times right now. Then there is also the concern being shown for frontline workers who have had unprecedented challenges in their professional careers due to the virus. One of the examples of that comes right here in Philadelphia. Brian Fritz is partner at the law firm of Fritz and Bean Cooley. During the pandemic, he launched Livelihood to Lives, which is buying meals from local restaurants and donating them to frontline workers. And Brian joins us right now. Brian, thanks very much for your time. Hope you're doing well.
Hi, Dan. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you. I guess let's get started with where the idea to do this really came from.
Sure. So our law firm, we're primarily known for is representing catastrophic injured people. And in order to adequately represent them and get them what they need to get through the rest of their lives, you have to be able to tell their story. And in order to do that, you have to be empathetic and step into their shoes. And that's what our career is based on. So when this COVID crisis happened, it was very easy for us to envision what business owners, in particular the restaurateurs, were going through, as well as the challenges, the unknown, the corresponding fear and stress that the folks on the front line, in particular the hospitals and the police, were going through. So we came up with the idea that we would purchase meals from struggling restaurants and donate those meals to the frontline workers to give them a boost and let them know they're appreciated and not alone. And initially, it started off with 4 restaurants and 4 healthcare facilities in the Philadelphia, South Jersey area when we first started it back in April. And then it blossomed to about 20 restaurants and 30 frontline facilities, including the police, in Philly, South Jersey, Los Angeles, Cleveland, and Boca Raton, where we donated in excess of 10,000 meals to the frontline people.
So in those other cities outside of the Philadelphia area, are you working with other entities there to be able to do that, or did you already have connections in those towns?
So what we did was, you know, we viewed it as not a regional thing, but a national thing. And we drew upon our friendships through various individuals who knew people with restaurants in those areas that helped spearhead the programs in L.A., Cleveland, and Boca Raton, and relied heavily upon them to sort of be the boots on the ground. And we just provided the finances to do that, as well as the moral support. And we would also hire videographers as well as photographers to go out and memorialize their efforts to package it into videos, which can be found on our Livelihoods to Lives website. And it's really a positive, in the midst of all the negativity we find ourselves, Dan, it's really a positive notion, and it really shows the power of community. And I think that's truly what not only the Philadelphia area is really about, but also the nation as a whole.
So 5 months into this pandemic, and how many meals have you done to this point?
We're in excess of 10,000 meals. We're still going, in particular in the Philadelphia area with the restaurants and the police, because it's not surprising the police morale at this point in time is at an all-time low. And we're really trying to show them that they're appreciated and needed. And really a lot of focal point is on them at this point in time.
Well, I think the interesting part to it is, and obviously it's great to be able to help the frontline workers, but also the fact that, the restaurant industry has suffered so much in this as well. So to a degree, you're trying to give them a boost as they try and get through this period of time.
Sure. And Dan, I'm not sure if you're familiar. I grew up in Northeast Philadelphia, and I spent a lot of my high school jobs and even after that in the restaurant industry. And what a lot of people don't realize is that the profit margins within these businesses are so razor thin to begin with. They're always battling increasing costs, wherever that may be. And they depend upon flipping, or basically a full occupancy, seating-wise, twice a night on Fridays and Saturdays in order to really make ends meet and draw a profit. So right then and there, you have them as well as all the staff that are in these restaurants, as well as, if you think about this, the derivatives, the food providers, the food growers, the linen companies, all these other ancillary businesses that depend upon the restaurant industry, the ripple effect is really daunting.
And did I see correctly that you're doing a lot of this operation? You're doing the funding element yourself.
Yes, I personally financed this, Dan. I could not draw upon the resources of the firm to do it.
Yeah.
Because in my mind, I would not risk the jobs and the fiscal health of the firm. While simultaneously doing something noble, I couldn't on the back end tell my employees that we were in a bad spot, because we didn't know where it was going to go for us as a law firm. But we've adjusted better than I had hoped we ever would. And things have gone particularly well for us. But, I committed my personal finances to it, just so that no one at our firm would be in jeopardy and we wouldn't have to do pay cuts or layoffs.
Do you expect that this venture, Livelihood to Lives, is going to be able to not only benefit so many people during the pandemic, but there's an avenue for you to want to continue doing this even as the pandemic slows down at some point and we get that under control?
Sure, and that's a great point. What we learned is that the positivity of something like this is magnetic, and it really draws a lot of people that. You meet some great people, and everybody wants to do right by others. And you learn that when you really get involved in something like this, and we plan on keeping that momentum alive. We've been in talks with other people to create programs for at-risk youth in the city, or children that have basically been abandoned by the system, and try to create an opportunity to teach them skills and give them some outlooks on things that maybe they wouldn't otherwise be exposed to. That's part one. We're also looking to try to help promote other charities and really just keep the whole thing going past the pandemic.
And from what I understand, you're out right now delivering meals to one of the police districts in Philadelphia, correct?
Yes, we're on our way to the 16th District in West Philadelphia. The captain there, Captain McShay, is actually retiring today. So we wanted to make sure that we were out there to help them, give her the appropriate send-off for a career spent serving the residents of Philadelphia.
I would imagine, and part of this obviously is, you're a lifetime resident of Philadelphia, and so obviously you want to try and give back, but I think there's something to be said about the coming together of people during a time of crisis like this to be able to lend a hand where you can to various elements of the community.
Sure. I mean, our slogan, and if you have an opportunity to see our second video, I'm not sure if you have, what we started saying was, it's the belief in an idea, the spirit of trying, and the power of community. And what you really learn, Dan, is the fact that so many people just don't achieve things just because they don't try. And when we started this, it was just, we didn't know where it was going to go. But we just knew that we couldn't sit it out, and we had to try. And from that, not to be redundant, it's really been this swell of support, swell of smiles, swell of just overall people wanting to naturally participate and, you know, do right by each other. And it's been uplifting and actually a reconfirming thing into the idea of what humanity is and really a positive on the human experience.
Great having you with us today, Brian. Have fun today out there at the 16th, and be safe, and look forward to seeing and hearing more about you. And what's the website if people would like to go check it out?
Sure. The law firm is Fritz and B. and Cooley. That's www.fbesq.com. The program is Livelihoods to Lives, and that is spelled out just as if you would write it in a sentence, .com. So we invite people to go on there, take a look at the videos. And in fact, when we posted it on Facebook, I actually put a warning up saying, warning, positive message and video to follow, just because we've been completely immersed in such negativity. So we hope that people really get a lift out of it.
Great having you with us today, Brian. All the best.
Thanks, Dan. Take care.
Thank you. Brian Fritz, partner at the law firm of Fritz and B. and Cooley. All right. In terms of what we have talked about over the course of the show today, we started out looking at talking with Rachel Lerman of The Washington Post about the congressional testimony brought forward by the four big tech CEOs and the impact that it has on their companies in the wake of it, or in this case, the lack of impact.
It's possible that as the economy kind of falters, that we'll see some impact for Apple as people kind of pull back on buying iPhones and other devices. And Facebook and Google, you know, will face these sliding digital ad revenues. But honestly, they are so large in the businesses that they control that they're the first choice that consumers turn to. So pretty much they are bulletproof.
We also talked with Sabil Marcellus of Yahoo Finance about the earnings reports by Exxon and Chevron and how it just highlights the issues that the oil industry are dealing with right now.
It does speak to, as you were saying, Dan, the impact of the coronavirus, the shutdown, the, you know, dwindling demand when it comes to oil, and the oversupply and overproduction. Obviously, for the oil industry, this is a big problem for investors. But for Americans and their personal finances, going to the gas station hoping that they could possibly capitalize on this and have really cheap gas, it is cheaper, but it's not like you're getting a dollar a gallon when you, you know, just try to fill up your car.
Tyson Foods announcing weekly on-site coronavirus testing at all of its facilities. Hannah Denham of The Washington Post covering this story, telling us why this move specifically shows that the food industry is no longer waiting around for the federal government to set new guidelines.
I think what this shows is the food services industry is just really ready to get back. We've seen sort of this piecemeal approach by the federal government in conducting sort of a nationwide strategy to combat the virus. And it looks like food services, as well as other retailers, you know, the slew of mask mandates that we've seen at Walmart and Target and other retailers, we're seeing them take matters into their own hands and say, okay, well, we have to balance our bottom line as well as the safety of our employees and our customers, so here's what we're going to do.
We also talked with Steve Odland, CEO of the Conference Board, about their recent report about how CEOs are thinking about the future of work. He notes that there are certain permanent behavior changes that are really going to affect the economy moving ahead.
I think CEOs and business leaders are finding ways to do without the same numbers of people, and this happens in every recession. You get more automation, you get more digital transformation, more work from home. So you see real estate being affected. You know, they say that the New York real estate market's going to get hit by about 20%. The people are going to downsize. That's going to have a ripple effect through the economy, through the financial sector. You see that people are doing more with less, and that means fewer jobs, on and on and on like this. So there are some permanent behavioral changes through these times.
Developing supply chains for the future is going to be the part of a new Wharton Executive Education program. We talked with Santiago Galeno, one of the leaders of that program, about how companies need to account for these new uncommon, unusual circumstances.
The idea of incorporating risk as something that you need to consider when you make your supply chain decisions is going to be part of the new normal. And we need to think about cost and efficiency, but with a mindset that also takes into consideration being responsive and being resilient. And I think that this is something that in the past many supply chain managers have dealt with as a either or, and now it's clearly both things that need to be addressed.
We also talked with Nobel laureate and noted economist Paul Krugman about the state of the economy right now. One of the topics we talked about is the future of work.
We sort of had a baptism of fire for remote work, and we've learned a lot about what can be done, also about some of the downsides, and no doubt a lot of in-person office work will come back, a lot of brick-and-mortar shopping will come back, but probably not all of it, because, you know, if you're going to sit in a room staring at a PowerPoint listening to some guy droning on, you might as well do it from your home office instead of having to fly across the country to do it. So there will be some permanent shifts as a result of this, and it's anybody's guess just how big they're going to be.
Those are our highlights from the show. Don't forget, you can listen to our entire show on replay tonight, 8 p.m. East, 5 p.m. Pacific, here on Sirius XM 132. That'll take care of the show for the day and for the week. I'm getting a couple of days vacation, and it'll be a pleasure for you to get the opportunity to hear next week Warden Professor Mauro Guillen sitting in this chair and talking with you about a variety of different topics. That'll be coming up early part of next week, so we wish Mauro well. And I'll be back with you guys in a few days' time. Hope everybody enjoys their weekend. Hopefully it is a great weekend for you. Everybody enjoy it. Many thanks to Matt Datz, Michelle Stucker, Dion Simpkins. And we will talk to you down the road here on Sirius XM 132.